Welcome back to the program. I want to thank Elliot Friedman for stopping by. As always, lots to get to today. And not just on the Montreal Canadiens page. By the way, the Habs face off against the Vancouver Canucks tonight. Do what you would like with that information. Brian Boucher is still to come an hour or two. Also an hour or two, Eric Engels from Sportsnet. More on the Jeff Molson press conference, the dismissal of Mark Bergevin, the hiring of Jeff Gorton as well, and the decision on who the next Montreal Canadiens general manager will be. And Jason, you're a confirm or deny. You've thrown your hat into the ring. Or are you happy just being part of the Kempville 73s?
I got enough on my plate right now, Jeff. Coaching and owning a junior hockey team. Man, it is a lot of work. But I love it. It's awesome. Working with young kids, it's very gratifying. But no, I'm not putting my hat in the way.
So,
hey, by the way, yeah. Love that new commercial with you and Fridge, but what is going on with your salad, man? It's out of control.
Yeah, that was shot at the Canadian. We had no idea we were going to shoot a commercial that day, a little peek behind the curtain. So we just got to the Ford Performance Center to do some interviews for the podcast. And they're like, hey, you want to shoot some stuff for a commercial? I'm like, my feathers look awful. I've got no makeup. I'm not dressed. And Fridge is like, okay, I guess so. So honestly, that whole thing was shot in about, I don't know, I think we did like one take of all of it. The whole thing was shot in like 20 minutes, Jason. I had no idea we're doing a shoot that day.
Though. Great commercial, but I knew you're having lid problems that day. Something was up.
I know, bad feathers, eh? I know.
Well,
that's before the weekly haircuts at hockey night, so I had to fend for myself at that point.
Yeah. Right on.
It's like, Merrick, do you have a mirror in your house? What are you doing when you leave at least have a look in the mirror. Check yourself before you get out the front door. Before we get into the Ottawa Senators and the Matt Murray situation, we sort of joked about it off the top here. It is the news story today. Impossible not to have an opinion on it. Mark Bergevin dismissed, Jeff Molson press conference about an hour ago. Was a pretty lengthy one as well. Jeff Gorton comes in as the executive VP of hockey operations. This is going to be a two-person operation now. It'll be Jeff Gorton in association with a general man. When you look at everything that's gone on in Montreal, and I've maintained, for teams like Montreal, it's not an 82-game season. It's 82 one-game seasons. That's the way it feels like. That's the way it feels in Vancouver, by the way, right now as well.
Yep.
What is your read on everything happening? It's a wide-brush question. Everything happening in Montreal right now?
Well, I'll tell you, first and foremost, I did color for Sportsnet for 3 years in Montreal, and I was in Montreal, and I got a really good look on the daily dynamics of how it works there with the media, and the press is very powerful. This just in Montreal, it's everybody says, why do you have to have a French speaking GM? But I remember when I was there, Birch, he had to speak weekly almost. So getting the message out there is vital. I actually like what Molson's doing. Gorton's going to be running the operation. He's going to be the brains. Then they're going to have somebody that can speak the language come in and be the guy that gets the message out to the community. And obviously it's going to be a hockey guy too that's going to have some skin in the game. But that position, Jeff, correct me if I'm wrong, it's almost become a two-man job when you really look at it. It can't just be one guy calling the shots because there's just so many moving parts with the salary cap and just being competitive. It's the NHL is more competitive than ever, and it just can't be a one-person job. So Montreal, do I agree with the whole French? Well, yes and no. You're limiting your talent pool, but it is what it is in Montreal. It is very, very important. I saw it firsthand. There's a lot of pressure there, but man, it's almost like they were set up for failure for doing so well last year in the COVID season. Expectations got raised, much like here in Ottawa, because Ottawa's great finish to a year. Everybody thought Ottawa was going to be, the rebuild was over, but for Montreal, I feel for the city. I feel for what's going on there, but this was a big setup after that playoff, because they were not as good as how they played last year. Carey Price covered up a lot of warts. Carey Price covered up a lot of warts.
Yep.
Did you think Cole Caulfield was going to come back and do that? Suzuki, pressure is now on. Okay, you had a great playoff. Now let's see what you can do in a real 82-game schedule. So that team wasn't ready to do what they did last year. They hit lightning in a bottle, and now crap has hit the fan.
Yeah, and we'll be curious to see, you know, Elliot and I were just talking about someone like Danny Briere, who seems to really be sort of, that name seems to be emerging here.
We'll see.
Real smart guy. And listen, you don't have to, I don't have to run down the qualifications of Daniel Briere to anyone listening to this program. That would be a really smart hire. I mean, he interviewed in Arizona for the assistant most recently for the assistant general manager position that went to John Ferguson. But he's, you know, long been considered a real up and comer in the executive ranks.
I like it.
And by the way, to the point about, you know, the media having, there's a lot of power, with Montreal Canadiens media. I remember the day where, you know, Red Fisher, you know, could actually nix trades. I remember there was one, it was a Montreal-Toronto deal. I hope I have the primaries right here. It was like Wendell Clark and Gary Lehman in exchange for Claude Lemieux and I think Shane Corson. I think those were the four primaries involved. And Fisher called the Montreal Canadiens and essentially said, you know, if you do this deal, I will run your front office out of town. Like that, and the deal went, and the deal didn't happen.
I remember it's like, that. No, it's true. It's totally true. It's like, I just remember when I drive up to do games and I go to the morning press conference, like, every single day in Montreal, there's 20 people in the room, and you got to do it in English, you got to do it in French, and it's just the message that gets out, and everyone's listening. So people say you don't need a guy that speaks French, but it would be tough. And you saw what happened to Randy Cunningworth when he came in there. Of course, he got ran out of town. It's just, there's a lot of moving parts in Montreal you got to be very careful with.
Okay, to the Ottawa Senators. Pretty safe to say that Matt Murray and his representation were caught by surprise when he was told that he was being waived. I don't think that we should necessarily be surprised that nobody claimed him. You know, Buffalo's in the goalie market considering the Craig Anderson situation. Perhaps there was a salary cap floor issue that could have been addressed for the Arizona Coyotes if they claimed him. But ultimately, he makes his way to AHL Belleville. You know, one of the things that I've been thinking about here, as we always watch DJ Smith try to, you know, stick handle these post games and pre games for that matter. I mean, DJ's out there in front of microphones a lot. Ian Mendez actually penned a piece in The Athletic over the weekend addressing this situation. I think that Pierre Dorion has to come out and say something. You know, like, I look at Vancouver and, you know, Travis Green was the guy facing the microphones after every game. And finally, you know, whether it was Jim Benning himself or someone in the organization said, like, Jim, you have to get out there. Like, this just can't be the coach taking bullets after every loss here. I think that at this point specifically, considering now that Matt Murray is in the American Hockey League, I think Pierre Dorion needs to speak and needs to address the fans. What do you think?
I think it would be a good start, but you watch what's going on right now in Ottawa, and this happens any time the pressure starts to mount and losses and the rumors that maybe someone's going to get fired. And let's not forget, Pierre McGuire is waiting in the wings here, looking over his shoulder. Mm-hmm. It's the old game that you play. It's the blame game. And first up for bids here is Matt Murray. He's the guy getting blamed right now because somebody has to get blamed, right? That's how it works in the National Hockey League. And that whole working environment in Ottawa right now is very toxic. It's very toxic. And you've got a goaltender right now, right or wrong, he's getting blamed for the mess in Ottawa right now. Has he played well? Absolutely not. But you look at that Senators defense, he's playing behind, and you look at, you know, he had some COVID issues this year, he had some injuries. It just, like, I'm surprised, and I always wonder why teams do this. Why do you devalue your asset if you want to get rid of it?
Like, amen.
Couldn't you have just said, all right, we're going to send you down for 2 weeks conditioning to get your game back in order. You need some reps. You're going to practice every day. Go down for 2 weeks. Buy yourself some time. Who knows? Maybe that was said to him and he said no. I don't know that answer, but I've always wondered, why do you do that to players? And I can remember I was playing in Anaheim, and I had just signed a 3-year contract. Mm-hmm. This is what happens. A new general manager came in, Pierre Gauthier was fired. Brian Murray came in, and the first order of business was to send down all the three guys that Pierre had signed the year before, because you want to devalue what the other guy did. But then you make those players untradeable. I always scratch my head, and right now it's going on with Matt Murray. It's how do you trade this guy right now when you basically said to the entire league he's lost his game and we're sending him to the minors. So it's step one of the blame game. DJ right now is under a tremendous amount of pressure. But I agree. So somebody besides DJ has to talk, and it has to start with the general manager. Like the pressure DJ is under, and has he done everything right? You look at some of his moves, some of his players he's brought in. You'd have to think he went to bat for a guy like Josh Brown, who we had in Oshawa. But where do you start with the team, Jeff? And I go back to the point I made when I was talking about the Montreal Canadiens. Anytime a team does what Ottawa did last year, when you win all those games, what do they go, 10-3 or 10-5 down the stretch? Every one of those games, the Ottawa Senators were playing with no pressure. I know there's pressure every day playing in the National Hockey League, but the damage was already done. They weren't going to make the playoffs. They're now playing against teams that aren't taking them as hard as maybe if you're playing a Vegas or a Colorado. So you get those wins, but those wins to me, I've played on teams like that, Jeff. I call them not garbage wins, but they're not real wins because you don't have that pressure of trying to make the playoffs anymore. It's gone.
You know what they are, York Chop? They're potato chip wins. They're empty calorie wins. That's what they are. Well, it's a bag of chips.
But that's so let's back this up a little bit. You get all those wins. The general manager comes out this summer and he says the rebuild is over. And I think I came on your show at the beginning of the year, and you asked me two questions. You said, who's a player that's going to be a good for the Ottawa Senators? And I told you Drake Batherson. Yep. And then I said Ottawa Senators are not going to be a playoff team this year. Contrary to what people are saying, they're not ready to win. You're not going to win in this league with one top four defenseman in Thomas Chabot. As much as I like Artem Zub, he's not really a top four defenseman. He's there by default. And you've got your number one center in Josh Norris, who is basically just getting his feet wet in the league. And then you're going to have Pinto as your number two? Like, come on. Like that should never have been said by the general manager that the rebuild is over. The rebuild is not over, and the Ottawa Senators, did I think they're going to be this bad? No. But I didn't think they're going to be a playoff team, and I'm not surprised with the losses. It's just now I thought undue pressure was brought on to this group, that you don't put on pressure where you have young players trying to find their way in the league.
Okay, I've only got about a minute and a half for this one, but and I'm just talking about on the ice, York Chop, with Jason York here. Have you ever been bit on the ice, Yorkie, on the ice?
Yes, I have, Jeff.
Have you?
Been bitten. Yeah, man, I got bit. It was a scrum. We were playing the San Jose Sharks. And you would be surprised how many guys got bit. Lots of guys have gotten bit. Now if you do it, it's like you can't get away with it anymore. I was in a scrum, and I was face wash in I think it was Tony Granato, and I got my finger in his mouth, so he bit it. And it's like, well, hey, if you don't want to get bit, don't put your finger in someone's mouth.
Okay, hang on. Have you ever bitten anyone? Be honest.
I have never bitten anyone. I'm not a guy that goes looking for trouble, and I really don't like the taste of fingers. And
No,
it's awful. Hey, listen, you see the face washing going on after whistles. Like, you get a dirty, gross, stinky glove. And mind you, back then, I think my glove had some holes in it, so my finger might have been popping out. So it presented himself to be bit. But Biting has no place in the game. It really doesn't. And the bite I got was just a nibble. you saw there's a difference between a nibble and a real bite. I think he was just letting me know, hey, get your hand out of my mouth. Where this time there was like Kachuk's hand was bleeding. Like that was a pretty good chomp he put on him. And there is no place in the game for that.
What a controversial take. There's no place in the game for biting. Wow, that's
how do you like that one? I'm really bringing it today.
I love it. What's that?
You surprised though? I tell you, a lot of guys back in the day, like, and I don't want to be that guy. Back in my day, if you went into a scrum, like bad stuff happened. I remember once, and I'll be quick.
Okay, we got about 20 seconds. You got 20 seconds, Jerky. Go.
My whole face was stitched up. I went down the block a shot. I think it was Rick Tocchet. He came by and just took his stick and he tried to rip the stitches out of my face for blocking the shot. Like, guys who have no idea. You have no idea. Well, you do, but how mean the game used to be.
But whenever I talk to old timers, they all say how there's no respect left in the game anymore and how the players were so much more respectful.
Guys are full of crap.
We got to go. I know. Half the league at most times in any era should have been incarcerated. I get it. You're 100% right. You're the best, Jerky. Thanks, Paul. You be good. Jason York, the York Chop from the NHL on Sportsnet. Owner, coach, everything for the Kempville 73s. Hour two is on the horizon. Welcome back to the program. And welcome to Hour 2, again, the headline story of the day, which comes to us from yesterday, courtesy of the weekend. Mark Bergevin, Outers General Manager of the Montreal Canadiens. Jeff Gorton in. Today, Jeff Molson, owner of the Montreal Canadiens, saying Gorton has been signed to a long-term deal, now Executive VP of Hockey Operations for the Montreal Canadiens. The search has begun for a bilingual general manager. One of the names that has emerged here... who looks like a real solid candidate, too, is former NHLer Daniel Briere, who did play in Montreal. You might know him from the Buffalo Sabres, the Montreal Canadiens, etc. Did interview with the Arizona Coyotes for the assistant general manager position, which ultimately went to John Ferguson. Other stories, Matt Murray placed on waivers by the Ottawa Senators over the weekend. He clears and goes to AHL Belleville. Story today, both Anthony DeAngelo and Brett Pesce of the Carolina Hurricanes placing COVID protocol. They will both stay in Carolina. They will not make the flight to Dallas. Both, by the way, we should mention, played in that game yesterday afternoon as Carolina lost to the Washington Capitals. Fenway Sports Group officially agrees to purchase the Pittsburgh Penguins as well. Lemieux and Burkle will remain part of ownership and the executive staff will stay in place. Okay, we turn the page on some of these stories and want to focus in on a couple of different NHL teams, most specifically the New Jersey Devils and the Philadelphia Flyers. To help us do so is Brian Boucher, analyst for the NHL on ESPN. Brian, how are you today? Thanks so much for doing this.
Hey, Jeff. Doing well. I just want to say... even though I have a French name, I'm not bilingual, so I'm not in the hunt for the Canadian GM position as well. So, bummer for me.
I was going to throw your hat into the ring there with Luongo and Daniel Briere, I mentioned, as a certain candidate. You know, Patrick Waugh, you know, Martin Lapointe, Vinny Damfus, you know. So we can officially take you off the board, Brian?
Yeah, take me off the board. I didn't – my parents were French. But I didn't learn a lick of French, so I'm useless at this point.
Didn't learn French in Woonsocket? Is that what you're trying to tell me here, Brian? I have a hard time believing that.
I took it in school, but I relied on my dad a lot to help me with homework. So unfortunately, I didn't apply myself as much as I should have. And now look at me. I'm without an opportunity because of it.
Alas, but you're doing great, and ESPN's got a great one in you. Before we get to the Flyers, the Rangers, the Devils, and the San Jose Sharks, I mean, a couple of these games you're handling over the next couple of days here. You have a thought on Jeff Gorton? I mean, you know, widely respected general manager. What he did in his brief time as GM of the Boston Bruins is outstanding, whether it's Chara or Savard that he brings in, the drafting, you know, Kessel, Marchand, the Tuukka Rask deal. Like, He really helped lay a foundation for the Boston Bruins and for the incoming general manager, Peter Chiarelli, that you could even argue to this day they're dining out on, to say nothing of his work laying foundations for the Rangers right now, which Chris Drury in a lot of ways is dining out on. Do you have a thought on Jeff Gorton along the way here?
I don't know Jeff personally, so I'm going to say this, that I'm going to lay that out there first of all, but I'm happy for him. I mean, I thought, from an outsider looking in, thought he got a raw deal there in New York, and he deserved a lot better. And I think when you see people do good work, you want to see them, have jobs in the National Hockey League. And it was a confusing situation in New York, what happened last spring. And, when you see a guy like that get rehired quickly, it just goes to show you that I think he's widely respected around the National Hockey League. And I think you mentioned all the work that he did in Boston. He's worn various hats in different organizations. So he's put the work in, he's put the time in, and he deserves another shot. And he's going to be doing it in a place that has got a lot of pressure, a lot of attention. And truthfully, I think it's a place where, they're kind of hitting rock bottom right now. So it'll be interesting to see the approach that he brings and the way they want to go. I mean, obviously with no Carey Price and no Shea Weber, they've hit some tough times this year. But I think they're desperately in need of a retool. And I think Jeff Gorton has a lot of experience, and it'll be interesting to see how it plays out for him.
One of the things, I'm not sure whether you saw the Jeff Molson press conference, but one of the things that Molson talked about, how this is going to be now a two-person team. There's going to be, Jeff Gorton in association with a general manager, and talked about, how, retrospectively, he probably should have had another person working with Mark Bergevin. And, Elliot Friedman and I were wondering in the first hour of the program, Brian, whether when you consider how much goes into what a general manager does now, which isn't just hockey decisions anymore, are we getting to a place, in your estimation, in the league where you can't just have one person? Like, the art of the single general manager is done. Like, the days of, like, just Sam Pollock, handling all of it, or Bill Torrey handling all, like, those days are gone. Like, are we at a point now where, you need a big staff to handle what, all the responsibilities that normally we think of go into what a general manager does, a single general manager?
Oh, 100%. I think we've already seen it a lot in the NHL. I mean, a lot of the assistant GMs right now, a lot of them don't have hockey backgrounds, yet they are experts in contracts and in cap management and such. So, there's so much with regards to, handling player development, your drafting, your pro scouts, your amateur scouts, worrying about the day to day of your NHL team. I mean, there's a lot of responsibilities that the general manager oversees. And I think probably delegating some responsibility to some other people is important. The fact that, Jeff Molson had mentioned that he wants to have more than one person, it kind of makes me wonder, was Scott Mellenby not overly involved with the day-to-day of what Mark Bergevin was doing? I mean, I was led to believe that, Mellenby was Bergevin's right-hand man, so I thought he had some responsibility in that regard. So a little interesting, but, to me, like, this whole thing, Gorton, I got to think, is going to be the man in charge of all of this. And although he's going to work in concert with the hired general manager coming up, and it'll be a bilingual choice, obviously, I got to think that Jeff Gorton is going to be the man that's in charge at the end of the day. That's how I read it, and it's just a way to get around the idea of needing to hire somebody that is bilingual at the general manager position by hiring Jeff Gorton. So a man with a lot of experience, who's, like I said before, he's worn a lot of different hats. And I think that's important, and I think he's got the experience and probably the thick skin to handle a place like Montreal, because you're going to need it.
It's true, and I think you nailed it with that as well. I think at the end of it, Jeff Gorton is the one calling the shots here. Let's get to some of the teams you're covering here in the next couple of days. Wednesday you've got the Flyers and the Rangers. Tomorrow you got the San Jose Sharks and the New Jersey Devils. And watching the Devils and the Philadelphia Flyers yesterday, and Andreas Janssen, two goals and two assists, and they look great, and they're doing it all right now without Jack Hughes, and he's on the horizon, he's coming back. sooner than later for New Jersey. I looked at these teams in the Metro, Ryan, and I said, listen, pretty much everybody seems to have improved, and that includes the New Jersey Devils, but I didn't know they were going to be this good this fast. And again, we just passed the quarter mark, like Toronto-Anaheim, that game was the official quarter mark of the season. Are you impressed with what you've seen from New Jersey so far, or did you think that they had done enough in the offseason to say, you know what, they did a good job in the offseason, Dougie Hamilton, etc., I expected this?
Well, I mean, I expected them to be better, there's no doubt, and 20 games is, you know, a pretty good sample size, so I think you're pleasantly surprised with where they're at right now, especially considering the fact that Jack Hughes missed, you know, a significant time. Dougie Hamilton has helped their back end immensely. I think Ryan Graves has helped their back end as well to solidify that back end. So that's been much better. Dawson Mercer is a surprise.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's just played fantastically, and I don't even know how you could break up that line of Mercer and is it Johnson we're calling him now today or Johnson? I don't even know we're calling him anymore. But
he was here in Toronto. He's always Andreas Johnson when he was a Marley and a Leaf. Right. So that's what I'm sticking with.
Yeah. Okay. We'll go Johnson for today. And yes, for Brad, I mean, that line has been awesome for this team. So they've gotten, you know, I think Hamilton has been as advertised for them. Mercer has been a nice, pleasant surprise, I think. And with Hughes being out and looking like he's going to be coming back here pretty soon, it's going to bring some depth to their lineup. And look, I mean, I've always been a big fan of Mackenzie Blackwood. And, you know, now that he's healthy and they got two goaltenders that can give him quality starts, it gives him a chance. And it's a tough division. 20 games is not 82 games. We'll see how it plays out in the end. You got to stay healthy and all that. But if you're Tom Fitzgerald, you have to be happy with the direction that this organization is going. And then you think about, you know, their minor league team in Utica. I think they set a record for wins in a row. So obviously they're doing their job down in the American League as well. So it looks bright, and they got some good prospects on the horizon too. And Luke Hughes, Alexander Holtz. I mean, you know, so, you know, some positive days coming for the New Jersey Devils, I think.
It's a smart organization, isn't it? Like, I know that, you know, before it was Lou. Everything was about Lou. And now you mentioned Tom Fitzgerald, certainly the general manager there now and new ownership with Harris Blitzer. This is a New Jersey Devils team that is, you know, much like everything else in the Harris Blitzer portfolio, you know, very analytically driven. They want to be, you know, the smartest team in the league. Like, that's something internally they talk about. We want to be the smart team. Do you see that with the New Jersey Devils?
I do. I think, like you mentioned, they do look at things analytically, and I think it's important to do so. I don't think you want to, you know, base all your opinions on that. But when I look at the way they play, there's they're fast, right? They're speedy. And I think when you look at some other teams in contrast, you know, the Islanders have gotten old overnight. And I know that they've been hit by the COVID bug and the long road trip to start the season. But when you compare those two teams, the Devils are a fast team. They're young. They've got skill. The Islanders have gotten old overnight. They look slow. They look tired. You know, to when I look at New Jersey, I just think that, you know, the moves that they made, getting a guy like Hamilton who can drive offense, right? When he's on the ice, you know pucks are going to the net. You know you're probably going to be playing in the offensive zone. You know, this plays into the hands of some of their good young offensive players. And I just think it was a good signing by Tom Fitzgerald when maybe a lot of teams probably were trying to, you know, stay clear of Dougie Hamilton, maybe thinking, oh, the price tag's too high or the previous baggage that you heard about. But, you know, I think he's turned into a pretty darn good, you know, offensive. You know, he's always been offensive, but his well-rounded game has helped his New Jersey team. And then the addition of a guy like Ryan Graves as well, I think it's pushed guys that slotted their defense pairings much better. So they're a team that, like you said, they're smart. They're going in the right direction. They got some skill. They got some speed. They got some talent. And I don't think they're going to be bottom dwellers for much longer as years go on.
No, I don't think so. And to the point about Dougie Hamilton, too, I don't know anyone, and no one comes to mind. Maybe someone can for you. Can you think of anybody who won times a puck smoother than Dougie Hamilton? Like, it's that to me, like, is one of his most remarkable skill sets. I don't know that anyone won times it like Dougie Hamilton does.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, no, it's hard to think from the
back end. So smooth, right?
Yeah, and you know, it's there's no dusting the puck off, right? I mean,
nope.
He gets it. It's to the net, and I think that predictability and that trust that you have in a guy to do that, I think that helps out, you know, big time all the way around. Like, you know, pucks are going to get there, so you know, make sure you're getting to the net as well, because you know it's not getting blocked, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's hard to think of a guy that does it as good as him. At times in the past, I used to think Brent Burns used to do it pretty well. Maybe he slowed down a little bit, but yeah, Hamilton's one of the best at it.
He sure is, and you mentioned Brent Burns, and we'll see the San Jose Sharks, the New Jersey Devils tomorrow. You're handling that game, and you mentioned Brent Burns, and you know, he's, you know, 36 years old. We've seen a lot of Brent Burns. He's one of our favorite players / characters in the game as well. But, man, don't sleep on, you know this, don't sleep on his defense partner. Mario Ferraro is having himself a real nice season. He gets, you know, 24, 25 minutes a game. I think he's leading the NHL in block shots as well. He's another big personality on that San Jose team as well. Where are you at on San Jose right now? Much like New Jersey, exceeding expectations?
Oh, big time. Big time exceeding expectations. And I love I just love the way they've handled all of the adversity that's been thrown at them, right? I mean, yep. The Evander Kane situation, no problem. Just keep pressing along. The COVID situation, no problem. We'll call guys up. They'll do a job. No complaining here. Head coach, not behind the bench, no problem. You know, James Reimer's been great for them. So, you know, I'm really impressed with the way San Jose has handled this season so far. And they compete and they play as a team. They play for one another. And they've really responded well. And I think they recognize that in that Pacific Division, there was an opportunity this year, right?
Yep.
You know, to be one of those teams. I think a lot of teams feel that way. Anaheim, LA feel the same way, that, you know, there's a chance here if we can get our acts together. And, you know, for San Jose, I think they've just done a great job. I mean, the addition by subtraction with Evander Kane, and I don't know how that situation is going to play out. I don't think he's ever going to play for San Jose again, but I just wonder if there's going to be suitors for him around the league. We will see. But, you know, Bob Bugner's done a great job of keeping this group focused. And also they've implemented some younger players that have come in. You know, Jonathan Dahlin has come in and has done a nice job. They've got some veterans on that third line, and Andrew Cogliano and Nick Bonino. So they're doing a nice job in a situation where it could have been a lot uglier. I think they've exceeded expectations for sure.
The only thing I wonder about, and as you mentioned, like right now, Evander, and I'm going off the air at 2 o'clock Eastern here, and that's when we'll find out if anyone put in a claim on Evander Kane. Right now he's on waivers. We'll probably end up with the San Jose Barracuda of the American Hockey League. Brian, the only thing I wonder about here is if a team says, yeah, we're interested in Evander Kane, San Jose may have to eat part of the contract to get rid of him. But I wonder, what if the other NHL team says, but we want to see him play. We want to see him play in the NHL. Like, we want to see him for a couple of games with the big squad. Then all of a sudden, you're in a real tricky situation. I mean, listen, you played in the NHL. You know what the dynamics are. That to me could be a real tricky situation, right?
It is, because, you know, you got a locker room that seems to have, you know, gotten stronger, right? And now you had a guy in that, you know, it's clear as to why you'd be having him in the lineup once again. It's to simply showcase him, right? Yeah. I don't know. Why do you need to see him in the NHL? What do you need to see if you're the team that's trading for him? That's the question that I would ask. Do you want to know if he plays hard? Do you want to know if he goes to the dirty areas? Evander Kane does all that. I like Evander Kane as a hockey player. Like, when he's on his game, like, he's a very effective player. It's just the baggage that surrounds him that is a distraction to your team. And if you're a team that's struggling, right, how are you convinced that's going to be changed now? You know, so I don't know why having him in an NHL lineup. If I'm the San Jose Sharks, I'd be, why do you need to see him in a Shark sweater? Like, it's not going to change anything. So that's why I wonder. I just, you know, in taking, you know, obviously they're going to have to eat some salary to facilitate a trade. I just wonder if you're the team that's trading for him, you know, is the risk worth the reward? You know, I don't know. You know, it's just a tough one. It's, you hope that you don't ever want to give up on people either, right? You know, you hope that for Evander Kane, you know, he looks in the mirror and holds himself accountable and understands that things need to change in his life so that teams can trust him once again. You know, he makes a lot of money, and if you're going to take a salary on like that and you bring him into your club, you have to be able to trust him in every aspect of life.
One final thing on San Jose, and I want to move on to Philadelphia and the Rangers. Timo Meier, it feels like I should be saying, finally, we're seeing the next sort of emerging power forward in the NHL. Do you feel the same way?
Yeah, I mean, he's shown glimpses of it, hasn't he? I think he's a guy that when you just look at how big he is, you know, physically, the way he can skate, you know, he has shown at times in this league that he can score, but the consistency really has not been there. He's a guy that just, you know, leaves you wanting a little bit more. So, yeah, has he finally arrived once again? Maybe. We shall see. But when he's on, guys like him and Hurdle, you know, when they're on their games, like they're big horses, you know, like they're tough to contain. But, you know, for a guy like Meier, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I think he had 30 goals once in his career and a couple of 20-goal seasons. There's no reason why he can't be that on a consistent basis with his talent, his size, and his skating ability.
Absolutely. Yeah, he's got a 30 and a 22 and a 21 is what Timo Meier has so far. Okay, quickly, Philadelphia and the Rangers. I want to ask about goaltenders. I've got Igor Shesterkin as my Vezina Trophy winner in my preseason predictions, and I've seen nothing, Brian, to sway me from that, specifically when you consider how the Rangers consistently bleed chances, and they're cool with it because Shesterkin can bail them out.
Yeah, maybe he likes it that way. I don't know. Some goaltenders like that. Like, I always remember, like, Cujo back in the day. Like, Cujo is amazing in Edmonton and in Toronto on teams that gave up chances and shots. And, you know, when he got to Detroit, it was a little bit different when, you know, he played a little bit differently. So who knows with Shesterkin. But I agree with you. This guy has just been sensational. The Rangers have tightened up a bit here lately. But overall, I mean, Shesterkin is their MVP, hands down, even though Kreider's got 15 goals and has been terrific. Without Shesterkin, they probably have about five more losses in their record from what I've seen in their game so far. He's been great. He stops at puck, but watch his puck handling. Like, his puck handling is elite. Like, he can move it, and he makes plays, and he also has the ability to fire it out of the zone if there really is a lot of trouble. So I've been impressed with that. I mean, it's not just the fact that he can stop pucks. I think his overall game is tremendous.
And finally, on the goaltending, the other team, this is the Wednesday game you're handling, Philadelphia and the Rangers. Carter Hart, first of all, we know COVID was tough on everybody last season. The point has been made by many that it was particularly difficult for younger players, where some of the older guys had families to go home to, the younger guys just had their apartments to go to and sort of live between their ears, and it's really mentally challenging for a lot of players. I believe Carter Hart was one of them, but this guy's back big time, Brian.
Yeah, he's played better, and you know, the other thing too, right now, the goals against are going up for the Flyers here recently. I think they've given up 4+ in the last 5 out of 6, so that's a trend that needs to stop. Because it can spiral out of control quickly. And it's not on the goaltending. I will make that clear. But when you give up a lot of goals, it can start to affect the goaltending. But Hart, I would say, overall has been very good for the Flyers this year, and he seems to have found his confidence that he had, you know, a couple seasons ago. And you're right. I mean, last year was a tough year on a lot of people, and when things start to go badly and you lose confidence and you really have no outlet, it can be very difficult, and I think it was difficult for Carter Hart, but encouraging signs that he's, you know, came back into the season, started the season off very good, and he's had a couple of wins. Like the one win against Carolina, he was sensational, and, you know, that's one of those wins that can really catapult you where you know you beat a top team, and you pretty much did it on your own. That, to me, you know, is what you need for a young goaltender. I think he's going to compete with Mackenzie Blackwood for that last spot on the Canadian Olympic team. That's how I see it. And I think the Flyers are encouraged by it, but they've got to be better defensively because, you know, this is, they've lost six in a row, and this is one of those situations where six can turn into 10 and 12 if you don't start to defend better. They're making mistakes. Their power play's not scoring. The pressure is starting to heat up a little bit here in Philadelphia. So you just hope that doesn't bleed into what we saw last year and then the goaltending starts struggling. You know, that's something that you need to keep an eye on here in Philadelphia.
Absolutely. Yeah, the heat is on, as you know, with the Flyers right now. On that, we'll let you go. Listen, Brian, tough to hear the news about the Montreal gig for you. But better things on the horizon, I'm sure, and ESPN's got a great one. Brian, thanks so much for doing this.
All right, Jeff, take care. Thanks, man.
There he is, a great Brian Boucher from ESPN, breaking down a couple of games that he's handling over the next couple of games, days rather. Always a good chance to talk about the San Jose Sharks and the New Jersey Devils. Brian handles that tomorrow. Then Wednesday, it is the Flyers and the New York Rangers. Three stars of the week, by the way. Give us another chance to talk about Alex Ovechkin, I suppose. Three stars of the week from the NHL for November 22nd to 28. Your first star, Alexander Ovechkin. No surprise. 4 goals, 3 assists, 7 points in 3 games. Tristan Jarry with a perfect 3-0 record over the past 7 days. Save percentage 978 in that process and 1 shutout. And then Cale Makar of the Colorado Avalanche. Oh, by the way, Nathan MacKinnon on the ice today, welcoming him back soon. 4 goals for Makar, 3 assists, 7 points as well. Same as Ovi. That, though, in 4 games played. Alexander Ovechkin just continues to dazzle everybody. Like, Alexander Ovechkin continues to be, with all due respect to Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid, who are, I don't know how much more we can gush about those two, specifically McDavid. But Ovechkin, like, how many times have you looked at Ovechkin's stats? Okay, like regardless of like watching him play, where he's still full of energy and enthusiasm and goes to the net hard and is finding more and more creative ways to play and to score. How many times have you looked at Ovechkin's stat line, just the boxcars, and then looked at his age and said, how are you still doing this? Like Alex Ovechkin right now, if you're voting for the Hart Trophy, okay, and I listen, many of us are handing this thing to Leon Draisaitl, Connor McDavid right now. Alex Ovechkin, very much you could make the case, should win the Hart Trophy based on what he is doing with this Washington Capitals team. Like, the Washington Capitals right now, I mean, every year people write them off. And I'm guilty as anybody else, all right? Every year I expect, okay, time is undefeated. It's going to catch up to the Washington Capitals, and that's going to be it. And this is going to be the season where it finally happens, where they finally steer this one into the ditch, and it's the end. And, oh, Ovechkin's just, you know, signed another contract with the Washington Capitals. The only thing he cares about right now is just the Gretzky chase. This team is 14-3-5 after 22 games. This team has 33 points, saying it playing at a 750 clip and a goal differential of plus 26. They're on a 3-game winning streak, and they just doubled up the Carolina Hurricanes in a high-profile matchup yesterday and are showing zero signs of slowing down. And driving the bus is Alex Ovechkin, who, and Mike Kelly was making this point the other day online, has only scored 1 goal from the OV spot. You know that OV one-timer spot that we all talk about? Oh, everyone knows it's coming, but you just can't stop him. He's only scored 1 goal from there so far this season. Alex Ovechkin, 19 goals, 1 of them from the OV spot. This guy is scoring all over, and this guy is making plays too, and this guy is playing with an enthusiasm that betrays his birth certificate. Normally, cynical people look at Russian hockey players and say, hang on a second, he's really older than that. I'd look at Alex Ovechkin's birth certificate right now and say, there's no way this guy's 36 years old. This guy looks like he's 25 years old. You're not supposed to play like this. you're not supposed to be leading in offensive categories around the NHL when you're at this elevated age. But Ovechkin's doing it. It is a thing to watch, and the Capitals are right there for it. Case in point, yesterday, in what was arguably the game of the weekend, the one that we all looked for, the showdown. Who's going to be tops in the Metro? Carolina, Washington, Ovi's Caps come out on top. And of course, Ovechkin scores his 19th in the process. We'll get back on the Montreal Canadiens page here in a couple of moments. We'll step away and come back and talk to Eric Engels from Sportsnet.ca. The Jeff Molson press conference, a full thought on that. Ditto for what this two-headed situation is going to look like in Montreal. You know, Jeff Molson, who signed a long-term deal, Jeff Gordon signed a long-term deal, according to Jeffrey Molson today, is going to be part of a two-person tandem. So the hockey decisions will be made by not one, but two. This is the new structure in Montreal. How is it all going to work? Who could the next general manager be? Eric Engels on those questions when the Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Welcome back to the program. I want to thank Brian Boucher for stopping by. Disappointed to hear that he's taken his name out of the running for the general manager position with the Montreal Canadiens. We'll find out who may be in the running with our man Eric Engels from Sportsnet.ca. Eric, how are you today?
I'm perfectly bilingual. Should I apply, Jeff?
Why not, right? I mean, go for it. That's part of the job. First of all, have you slept at all this weekend?
No. I don't really sleep a lot, but that's part of the job here. And the worst is, like, even when I do sleep, I get into the worst sleep patterns. Like, once hockey season gets going and we're a couple months in, I'm in bed by, like, 2 in the morning. I'm up at 7, and then maybe I'll get a nap in the afternoon on a game day after doing work in the morning. And then I come home after writing, you know, 12 o'clock and or, you know, 12:30, and I can't fall asleep till 2 o'clock. And it's, you know, and then... And then on days like today or situations like this weekend, you know, I get done my work and think about what I got to do next. So
yeah.
I don't know if it's that different than what the real work world is like for a lot of people out there. So I applaud everyone that's putting in the hours, like you, Jeff.
Well, listen, no one's ever accused what I do work. I've always maintained every 2 weeks a paycheck shows up and someone yells, "Stop thief." So I'll just won't complain in the first place. So Jeff Molson talks about needing a fresh start. What was your main takeaway from the Molson presser this morning?
Oh, my gosh. You know, I know it's my job to distill all of that, but I don't know if I have just one. I'll start here. Okay. I think he did a really good job. You know, here's a guy that was under so much fire and so much heat to speak over the last number of months. And his silence was deafening and pointed out by a number of people in the media. Never ended up writing that column myself, but I think some of the ones that were written, and I think of my colleague Marc-Antoine Gaudin with The Athletic wrote an unbelievable piece about it. You know, there was a leadership void here. And with a lame duck GM and Marc Bergevin, which was very clear as he didn't have a contract coming into the season, you know, people were looking at Molson as the president of the team, the CEO, the owner, but the president of the team and involved in all this to step up and start giving some answers, because what was happening on the ice as things, I'll say devolved instead of evolved, required some answers. Now, so here's my main takeaway is Jeff Molson waited until he had something to say. And what he did say, I thought was concrete. And I thought he made concrete, structured moves in terms of how he wants to operate the Canadiens moving forward. And he put a lot of thought into what he wanted to say and how he wanted to present it. I thought he, I have to give him credit. I think he stood up, answered all the questions, and presented a strong image of leadership, which, you know, helped mitigate some of the image that he had created around himself. A, and how the team was run over the last number of years, but B, certainly over the last number of months, where people were saying, where is this guy?
Mm-hmm. Where do you think it all went? Or maybe it's just he was just burned out, and we knew it was going to end up there. And as we've seen, general managers, you know, don't stay on the job while their contracts expire. They are dismissed before they have their contracts expire. Where do you think it went off the rails for Marc Bergevin? Where did it, because yesterday wasn't really the ending. Like, it ended before. But at what point, Eric, do you think it ended for Marc Bergevin?
It's hard to pinpoint a specific time, Jeff. I do know that him and Jeff Molson were talking about a new contract dating back to last year. There was a lot of reporting that went in and around that. I don't know that a formal offer was ever presented, but I do believe one for 3 years at a certain number that was below Marc Bergevin's expectations was being discussed. And I think he set the market for himself. Once he decided that he really wanted to be back as GM of the Canadiens and get a new contract in place, he had ascribed a certain value to that as a GM operating this 10th season, as a GM looking around the marketplace, which has certainly shifted with Chris Drury's appointment in New York. You know, I think it's out there by now that Drury got paid quite handsomely to take on two jobs as president of the team and as GM. But still, you know, as a first-timer coming into that role, he boosted up the market. And I know that Elliott's done a lot of reporting also on you know, the word getting out around the league to try and keep executive salaries down to a certain degree, especially in the conditions of the pandemic. So I just think, you know, Marc Bergevin assessed his own value and what he was able to do and the work that he did last year, which I think was arguably the best of his tenure in Montreal, leading to his nomination as a GM of the Year candidate. He got the most first place votes and the team went to the Stanley Cup final. And I'm getting tired of people talking about how that was a fluke based on what you see this year, because it's a totally different team. I really think that the Canadians were full value getting to where they got to, and Marc Bergevin had the biggest influence in them getting there. And I don't blame him for saying, hey, I think that's worth this. And based on what the competition is making elsewhere in the league, you know, I'm going to stand firm on that. And they weren't able to come to an agreement. And I think at least part of that reason was explained by Jeff Molson, because he said today that wasn't entirely sure that he wanted to go down that road with Bergevin, and that became clearer and clearer as the season approached, and abundantly clear, certainly over the last weekend.
You know, it's interesting how the Chris Drury contract in New York really kind of changed perspectives from a lot of general managers as to what they're worth. Now, many are quick to point out to me that, hold on a second, Drury here holds, you know, the dual portfolio of GM and president as well. But just as an aside, I mean, you follow the industry at this level. I mean, that the number, and I think it's around $4 million for Chris Drury, that kind of raised a lot of eyebrows amongst general managers, didn't it?
Yes, definitely. And, you know, let me ask you a question, Jeff.
Sure.
Is there a harder GM job in the league? I know how hard it is in Toronto, and I know how much scrutiny there is. And I know in Vancouver, the fans are ready to burn everyone at the stake. But
nothing's harder than Montreal. Nothing.
I think this job is just, it is. And I've seen it. You know, we saw it with Mark, but we saw it with Bob Gainey before that, Pierre Gauthier, Sarah Savard for many years. It is such a difficult job. And yes, when you see a first-time executive end up in a place like New York, and I'm not taking any of the merit away of Chris Drury being in the position that he's in, you know, you say to yourself, you know, what I do, I think it's worth something if you're Marc Bergevin, and I think it's worth more than what a lot of other people in the league make. And this is business. You know, he's on the other side of it, conducting it with the players and making those hard decisions. And Jeff Molson was put in that chair this time around and maintains that he's got a good relationship with Marc Bergevin, that business did not alter that relationship. And the business end of it now is Jeff Gordon's here and a new GM is coming and a new direction is being taken by this team. And I'll tell you, for as much as, here's my other takeaway now that it comes into my mind, for as much as Jeff Molson talked about how it was so clear to him that this is a job for two people, I think if there was one out there that filled the specific criteria that he was looking for, there would be only one person doing it. I think of a guy like Julien Brisebois, who left Montreal for Tampa Bay and, you know, has been a big part of them winning, certainly with credit to Steve Yzerman and the tutelage under him. If that guy was available, I wonder if two people would be running the show right now.
It's a fascinating question. I know there would have been a lot of teams, like to the point about Jeff Gordon, there were a lot of teams that would be looking at Jeff Gordon. Like, I don't think he was, I never thought he was going to last the season on the NHL network. I thought, like, okay, you look at the resume in New York, look at the resume from the brief time running the Boston Bruins. There's just no way this guy's going to stay on the sidelines. You know, he'll be essentially unemployed for as long as he wants to be unemployed. But now, you know, one of the things that Elliot and I talked about, you know, to the point about this being more than a one-person job, you know, Jeff Molson went out of his way, again, unprompted, to talk about wellness, to talk about mental health, and, you know, to talk about, you know, we all know how Marc Bergevin, like, looked and felt worn out at various times as general manager. To your point about, you know, this is a really difficult position. Maybe even if there is one Julien Brisebois who could walk in here, given, you know, how much you have to do as a general manager, you know, even on a, you know, a non-bilingual team, for a team like Montreal, like, your work is essentially, I don't want to say doubled, but it feels that way, Eric, when you're the general manager of the Montreal Canadiens and all communications have to be done in both official languages. And a lot of decisions become political because of both, you know, the considerations to both official languages need to be respected. I'm with you. I think it's the most difficult GM position in the NHL. I remember Brian Burke would always joke to me and said, you know, the toughest spot to be a GM in the league is Montreal, because when you're dumb in two languages. It's easier to go other markets where you're only dumb in one language. And there's a lot of truth in that. He says it in jest, but there's a lot of truth here. The thing that I wonder about is if it's going to be this two-headed situation. Ultimately, when you have two people and there's one issue, someone has to make a final decision. And I know Jeff Molson said, you know, the GM is going to have final say. This is a unique situation where a general manager is going to have final say over someone who works above him. How's that going to work?
First of all, you know, I really think that Jeff Molson kind of misspoke in that moment. I based on everything else he said in this press conference, it seems very clear that those decisions are going to be made in tandem. And, you know, I don't think they have, you know, he talked about a high level presentation of the change they intend to implement. I don't know if they've drilled down on the minutiae of how that relationship is specifically going to work until they know who the person is that's going to be in place and how that person will complement the experience of Jeff Gordon. I'll tell you this, you know, you look at the bilingual candidates, there are many really good ones, okay? There are really good ones, but none of them, in my estimation, unless they're going back in time here, have experience being a general manager in the NHL. So this may not have been the road that Jeff Molson would have gone down if someone like Julien Brisebois was available.
Right.
But I think based on everything you were talking about just before, and God bless Brian Burke for that quote, it's a great one. you know, it's a good direction to be taking. It's a good direction to be taking. Now, the big question that you need to figure out, and the big thing you need to figure out as an organization, is who is the person that you can put in that role and ensure that he doesn't feel as though his toes are being stepped on, that he can work as a teammate, he can gain that experience from a guy of greater experience, Jeff Gordon, and inevitably get to a place where the final decision really does rest with him, and then it's authorized and obviously consulted on with a person that's in the role that traditionally Jeff Gordon is filling. You know, like, they really are working as a team. And I'll say this, Jeff, you know, obviously over the last couple of weeks, months, I've been looking into who the potential candidates are. And like I said, there's a lot of good ones. Mm-hmm. I think, and from what I've been told, I believe Daniel Briere is very, very high on that list. And when I think about the criteria that Molson is trying to fill, and I mm-hmm. think about who would be able to step into a tandem kind of approach to that role and fill it admirably and without much consternation and conflict, I should say, I think about Daniel Briere.
Who right now, we should point out for those that don't know, works for the Philadelphia Flyers organization and was interviewed by the Arizona Coyotes for the assistant general manager position, a job that was ultimately given to John Ferguson, then of Boston. I like the Briere suggestion. Like, I think that there's, You know, whether it's Matthew Darche with Tampa, whether it's Roberto Luongo. Like, I think that there's a number of potential candidates here. I like the Briere. Like, for the longest time now, I mean, anyone in the industry has heard that name for a while. Everybody knows the aspirations that Daniel Briere has. Everybody in Montreal knows Daniel Briere. Briere, obviously, you know, bilingual, you know, French-Canadian hockey player. I like Briere as one of those candidates. Can't say that I don't. Would have to assume that he would have had some type of relationship working ECHL Maine in conjunction with the Rangers in a very unique setup. Probably would have worked more with Chris Drury in that capacity, but Jeff Gordon would have been the general manager of the New York Rangers at that point, and there would be a comfort level certainly with Daniel Briere. Listen, I'm with you. If that ends up being the choice, I like it.
I think there's more to it, though, Jeff. You know, here's a guy who's taken the long road and seen the value in trying to gain that experience. You know, he was asked a while ago about potentially becoming GM in Philadelphia, you know, 3-4 years ago, and said, I'm not ready for that. I got to put in the time and the appropriate measures to be able to assume that kind of office. And that involved him going to the Wharton School of Business. It involved him going to work as a GM in the ECHL and learning the day-to-day functions and being involved with the players. And, you know, that experience, it's funny. Like, you'd look at it and say, oh, well, you know, he hasn't been a GM in the AHL or the NHL, but he is connected to a young generation of players. And I think it's fair to say that the Canadians, regardless of how many contracts they have on the books moving forward, are going to be getting younger. You know, and I just think about the aspects that the GM is going to have to fill that Gordon won't, the public-facing kind of figure here. You know, I see the validity in Briere's candidacy. I will say he's definitely not alone. Like you said, Matthew Darche is a good candidate. Roberto Luongo, you know, fills the same criteria for many of the same reasons. Whether or not he'd leave Florida and come to Montreal is a question, and financials are a question too in terms of what you'd have to pay someone to take that job, knowing you're paying Gordon long term on a contract, and that, you know, he wasn't willing to go, Molson wasn't willing to go down that road with Bergevin again. So, you know, all that enters into the equation. Another name that's come out here and has been lobbied for quite vehemently within the marketplace and the fans is Martin Madden Jr. And here's a guy that is absolutely, unequivocally, one of the best talent evaluators on the amateur side for sure, and partially on the pro side in his functions as AGM more recently with Anaheim. And, you know, there's a lot of things that I find really interesting about that, because for one, you know, Anaheim lost their GM recently and they didn't name Martin Madden Jr. GM there, you know, so that to me is how come. And I think about that, and I think about people that I've spoken to and say, well, you know, he has been touring the rinks around Quebec and finding talent across the amateur ranks and done a better job of it than virtually anyone. And considering the Canadians have been deficient in that department for some time, mostly, I think, due to their development, but certainly in part due to their drafting, you know, he'd be a candidate that would be really exciting for everybody here. But how much time has he spent walking into locker rooms and talking to players? How much time has he spent speaking to trainers and GMs and rival GMs and working out contracts and all that stuff that comes with being a manager and a general manager? And, you know, these are questions that need to be asked. Meanwhile, they have a vacancy in Trevor Timmons' spot, right, Jeff? So
yes, they do. If you can do this in 60 seconds, bless you. That's your challenge. What's next for Marc Bergevin?
I think there's going to be a host of opportunities for him. And, you know, if I'm Vancouver, I'm picking up the phone and calling him. But I think, you know, you look at three California teams where there could be changes in the next, you know, over the next few months, they would be options. And I would not strike it as a possibility. And I'm about to set your phone lines on fire potentially, but, you know, if things don't work out in Toronto with this Maple Leafs team, I think he'd be a guy that they might call, because he's the antithesis of what they have going on there. But maybe that might be what they need. So I wouldn't strike it.
There's a lot on the line in Toronto this season. Everybody knows it, which is why, you know, you look at the Maple Leafs right now and the streak that they're on, how they've just, you know, mowed down California, most recently the Ducks last night. And the hue and cry is, well, that's great, but... And until they get to the playoffs, no one's... Put it this way, fans have felt false started a number of times here in the Toronto market. And I think it still is. They don't want to get too carried away with a Maple Leafs team that does well in the regular season. You're right. And there is a lot riding on what happens in the playoffs. Eric, great stuff as always. Great job being on the story. And there are plenty more pieces of this story still to come. We'll watch for your pieces at sportsnet.ca. Thanks so much for doing this.
We'll sweep the summer.
Absolutely. There he is, Eric Engels from sportsnet.ca, covering the story of the day, which is the Jeff Molson press conference and the story that happened over the weekend. Like, all of this sort of led into this press conference today. Marc Bergevin out as the general manager of the Montreal Canadiens. That's always a story. Trevor Timmins gone as well, who had been working side by side with Bergevin for years. Jeff Gorton comes in on a long-term deal, executive VP of hockey operations, and the search is on for a GM. Montreal, by the way, will face off against the Vancouver Canucks tonight, who I don't need to mention to anyone. They have their own drama. You can watch this one on Sportsnet East Ontario Pacific as well, starting at 7:30 Eastern. Also, the Calgary Flames hosting the Pittsburgh Penguins. Evgeny Malkin on the ice, hey, in the non-contact jersey. Watch that one on Sportsnet 1. Jets, Coyotes, Kraken, and Sabres. And that is your Monday night. Merrick Show back tomorrow. Thanks so much for joining me today.